I need the threat of being fired to do anything. That's very, very important as a motivational strategy.
So mine's less the threat of being fired and is more to do with I just want to be considered the best in the team. I'm very competitive.
Okay.
In case that character trait hasn't come across in the past, like, 53 episodes.
Well, you're definitely not the best person in this team, so I don't know what's going on there.
Is that... In what sense?
But just,
you know, I'm the one that brings the bants each week.
Yeah.
Lads, lads, lads. I bring the feminist perspective, seeing as you hate women.
Is this what the next 50 or so episodes is
going to be? The next 53 episodes. A nice round 53, because that was a really sensible time to actually close off the last series.
Should we talk about what happened over the summer?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, what happened, Jazza?
Should we say hello?
Oh, yeah. Do you want to do that?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Right Dishonourable Podcast. My name is Jazza.
My name is Jimmy.
And we are... This is series two, and we're trying to be more chatty now. So that's fun.
I've let Jazza off the leash a little bit. I had to rein him in quite a lot over the last 53 episodes.
Yeah. And so we're just going to try and be a little bit more... a little less structured, a little bit more conversational, trying something new for the new series, you know? We're going to be meeting up once a week to chat everything politics, current events, and... Fuck.
Social affairs?
Social stuff.
Social
Not
stuff.
Social affairs. That's what we're going to be talking about later with Keith Az.
As opposed to anti-social affairs.
And welcome back, everyone. Hi, we've missed you. Although I did need a break, I'll be honest. How was your summer?
Yeah, it was pretty Jimmy. Good. Yeah, it was enjoyable. You know, not having to do any of this stuff. That was great.
Being like reclaiming our weekend was actually quite nice.
Yeah, it was for like the first few weeks, but I, you know, I'm not imaginative enough to do fun stuff at the weekends.
I played Pokemon Go like a lot. I got to level 25.
Did you catch them all?
I know, I've got nobody catches them all. It's really difficult.
I was just disappointed at the lack of like the battling thing and the training element.
Oh, it's coming, yeah? Apparently.
Is it?
Once everybody has kind of forgotten that Pokemon Go was an actual app.
For that first week, that was like, it was a big deal.
It was a huge deal. More active users than Snapchat or Twitter. Like, it was insane. It's just had no monetizable qualities to it at all.
Strong play from Nintendo, as per usual.
But aside from me playing Pokemon Go and Jimmy realizing he has no ability to actually organise himself when he's free on the weekends, Theresa May, our new Prime Minister, in case you've been missing... from society over the past like 3 months, she went on a walking holiday in Switzerland after telling us Brexit means Brexit.
Yep.
Which was handy, because nobody really knew. Oh my god, what is this amalgamation of two words, Britain and exit? Whatever could it mean? Cheers, Theresa. It means a lot. Corbyn sat down on a train that he didn't need. He sat on the floor, right? Mm. Didn't need to do that because there were loads of free spaces. And then loads of people ended up debating about when is it socially appropriate for you to sit down on a reserved seat. And I had
was that a debate?
There were at least three separate articles about it on the BBC.
To be honest, it says on the ticket when the person who's reserved the seat is going to sit down, so you just sit down until that stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's crazy. But he wanted to sit next to his wife, which is why he then decided to sit in an alcove somewhere.
He can't even, like, manufacture a PR stunt properly.
No.
It's really,
like it,
really useless.
What was really annoying for me on that particular thing was the fact that there is a big problem with overcrowding in trains, and there is a case to be made for changing that by increasing rail stock, by changing management of trains and blah, 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 blah. But he chose to just do a really simple publicity stunt on a train that doesn't have that problem. Like, he took a train from London to Newcastle about 11 o'clock in the morning, yeah. Which is not, spoiler alert, that's not peak travel hours for anyone. And so he's trying to be like, oh yeah, this train's really, really crowded, on a train that is never really, really crowded. And that annoyed me, because there's a legitimate argument to make, and he's just fucked it up.
Well, that's just Corbyn, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey, hey, hey. That's going to be at least another year of the Labour Party. He's running for the leadership again.
Mm.
He's never happier than when he's being challenged for his leadership of the Labour Party, is he? He just seems really radiant, don't you think? Takes years off him.
It allows him to, you know, stand up and be righteous in front of people who already like him, which yeah. I guess is nice, you know. Everyone yeah. needs that self-affirmation.
It's lovely to meet you. The endorphins must be pumping through him like nobody's business.
Yeah.
But he's running against Owen Smith, who looks just like a generic human if he weren't wearing glasses.
Are you saying he looks like a white guy?
Yeah, he's just some generic white guy with no discernible features. Apart from, the New Statesman podcast talked about this, the only thing that makes him vaguely like recognisable out of a lineup of just middle-aged white men is the fact he wears thick-rimmed glasses. Mm. If he didn't have them, he'd be buggered. He could have body doubles left on at his centre.
He kind of looks a bit like Andy Coulson, the guy who was locked up after the phone hacking scandal. I'm just saying. Same person, possibly. Brothers, you know. Cousins,
this is
going to
turn into a conspiracy podcast, because I'm down. I'm up for that.
I think we could do better than that, you know, as a conspiracy.
No, I think we need stuff. To we need to pivot to really, like, low-level, uninteresting conspiracies.
We probably should stop slagging off Corbyn, then, because I feel a significant part of the conspiracy market in the UK supports Corbyn.
Supports, yeah, completely. So Brexit means Brexit. Is not actually allowed to be a thing anymore after David Davis stood in front of the House of the Parliament in the Commons and basically did a whole speech that was meant to be really clear about what we were going to be doing after the Brexit vote. And he basically summed it up in, well, Brexit essentially means leaving the European Union, which is very kind of him to clear that up, because I've been so confused. Why did we go to the polls in July, eh?
See, I thought that the Brexit means Brexit phrase, as I said to you before the podcast,
quite nicely summed that up anyway, without David Davis having to dive in.
Yeah, I mean, it did do that, but like that comment was originally made after people were debating whether or not we would be leaving the EU, even though we'd voted to leave the EU.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was just Theresa May saying, yes, this is actually happening. That's what I understood by it.
But what about David Davis saying it like 3 months later after everyone's come back from holiday and then making us all feel really great about the fact that they still have no plan?
He's just saying, you know, Brexit still means Brexit, you know?
Excellent. That's really great that that's been affirmed so strongly. For those of you who don't know, who maybe are joining us or have forgotten, Jimmy voted the wrong way and voted to leave the
EU. I was on the winning side, mate. I usually vote for the losing elections.
It's still the incorrect way. And I... very staunchly pro-EU, and I would actually quite like us to just ignore that July the 26th ever happened.
If it's a choice between, like, essentially being a member of the European Economic Area, being like a Norway, or being a full EU member, I'd prefer us to be a full EU member, because mm-hmm. the Norway option's dumb. Like, mm-hmm. even Norway thinks the Norway option's dumb.
Yeah, and want to join the European Union. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, their politicians do, but they're, you know, the actual Norwegians, they're yeah. not having it, but, you know, the people, right? It's
yeah.
difficult.
We won't talk about what you think we should be doing for Brexit, because I'm sure we'll come onto that at some point. Actually, you know what? Fuck it. What would your Brexit mean?
Are we actually doing like a full segment now, or are we? Like,
yeah, just, we're into it.
Oh, we're into it. I thought we were doing the cult intro.
Oh, well, is this the cult? The cult intro has been going on for like 10 minutes. Okay. Shall we? Okay, music now.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
No, just okay, cool, fine.
The level of communication on this podcast is...
You're the one who didn't want to do any kind of structure.
Yeah, fine.
It'll be more chatty, he said.
I'm running.
There'll be more banter, he said.
Well, you know, you said you'd bring the banner.
I am bringing you the banter.
Shall I answer your question?
Yes,
about
you
Brexit
shall.
Brexit means Brexit. If Theresa May, like, thinks we should stay within the single market, as opposed to just having access to the single market in some like form, probably via some equivalence mechanism or whatever, as in meeting the regulations as a third country but not being within the single market.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking complicated.
You've lost me already, but yeah.
Essentially, if she thinks we should remain in the single market, then...
So this isn't about... Also, this isn't about her. This is about you. What was the Brexit that you voted for? Because this was the problem with Brexit, right? People voted for Brexit for a myriad of reasons, and now the Conservative Party are trying to figure out which of those reasons might actually not fuck us up.
Well, the people who voted to remain also had different views of which way the EU should go. So it's not fair to, like, portray the Leave side as fragmented and the Remain side as monolithic, if you see what I mean.
I think it is. Anyway, go on.
It isn't, because you've got, like, Corbynites who like the EU in some sort of internationalist sense, but dislike it because it's a neoliberal conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, like, the... sort of like Blairite tendency, I guess, who like the EU and like the fact that it's a neoliberal conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got two entirely different views of the way the EU
but
should
go. But
what
does your Brexit look like? Make me not hate you.
I think we should just leave the single market, basically. So I think it should be a full, like, pull out, as it were, mm-hmm. and then you reinstate migration controls.
Full pull out, ejaculate everywhere.
Ejaculate on her stomach, and then just, you know... You started it, mate.
I did. Why did I go there? I'm sorry.
And then just leave, you know? Just get out of the bed, walk to the door, and exit.
Okay.
Yeah, so
yeah, acknowledging that fucks up, like, so much of our... of the economics of our country and the industry in our country.
I don't think it does, to be honest. Like, I think you are essentially talking about a marginal difference here. Like, that was my point of view. People are still talking about Brexit, like, drop off a cliff, etc. That's the metaphor that's always used. And it's not going to be like that.
No, of course it isn't. It's going to be a gradual ebb of all of our international influence. Did you see the G20? So Theresa May went to the G20, got shoved to the back and to the left of all of these world leaders. Because everyone was just giving her the cold shoulder. And apparently...
Do you mean in the photograph? Or
yeah, in the photo. In the big photo with all of the important people. Merkel and Obama in the middle. Theresa May off to the left. In looking lovely in red, I might say.
Okay.
But off in the back and to the left. And apparently the British delegation were just given the cold shoulder by absolutely everybody. The Japanese release, like, a multi-page document of how they're going to take out all of their industry if we leave the single market.
Yeah, but in reality, the single market is one component of what makes Britain attractive to investors. So, you know, I don't really buy that argument.
Well, Japanese are going to leave, aren't they?
It's a question of, like, how much will they invest? They might invest slightly less.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. It's a marginal difference. It's not like a catastrophic difference.
I think it's going to be bloody terrible.
I mean, there are other countries that are not in the EU, and they're okay. I mean, some of them even have advanced civilizations.
Sure, but so much of our development as a country in the last 30 years has been based around EU infrastructure and our access to that market and the free movement of people.
Yeah, but that's because we've been in the EU, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost a tautological point, isn't it?
What do you think... one of the big... debating points around what Brexit actually fucking means is free movement of people
mm-hmm.
and immigration into this country. Theresa May seems really, really keen on having as much control over it as possible. So not maintaining the free movement of people, which is what would be necessary if we had a Norway-style system.
Mm.
She's pushed back on the idea of having a points-based system, which is actually what we already have for non-EU migrants into our country.
Yeah, somebody said, though, that the reason she doesn't like the points-based system is that
it's easily abused.
Well, they said it would let in too many people rather than too little.
Yes.
So...
Because you can't... So you could realistically have a cap, but it makes it harder to enforce that cap because you're basically just doing tick-box immigration policy.
Yeah.
But
she hasn't said what alternative system she wants.
So people are saying that it would be based on work permits. So very similar to what Singapore has, as I understand it. Basically, you have to have a job, you have to have a sponsor, and all of your rights as a resident of the country are tied into whether or not you have employment.
So she's privatising the immigration policy and handing it over to corporates.
No, but they are the ones who are going to have control over who ends up coming into the country. And then there's going to be a cap or a limit or a quota of how many... They still have the goal of reducing migration to the tens of thousands.
Mm.
Whereas at the moment, it's 180,000 was last year's net immigration.
Was that from the EU?
No, I think that was overall.
I thought the if you like, the gross figure was 600,000, the net figure was 300,000, and it's about half and half EU and non-EU. That's what it was last year, 2015, end of 2015 or whatever.
So there are slightly more immigrants into the UK from outside of the EU than within the EU.
Yeah, but it's quite close, isn't it? It's quite a similar amount.
Yeah, it's like 277 to 270,000 people.
Yeah, or something. That kind of makes sense. Yeah.
But what do you think about the idea of a work permit based system, like what Qatar and?
So it does sound it's very
Singapore.
It's very corporate influenced, isn't it? And
yeah,
that's not necessarily a great thing, because you kind of have, like, for instance, as a UK citizen, the only way that I could plausibly move to the US is if a company sponsored me, basically, or if I married
a US citizen. There's also the O-1 visa, which I had a really long conversation with Louise Mensch on Twitter about the other night.
Yeah,
it was really fun. Like, she thought I was a troll, but I was genuinely just wanted to talk about immigration reform.
That happens when you chat to celebrities, but you know, like,
she's a fucking,
you know, political wonks on Twitter.
Is she? I wouldn't call her a wonka. What was clear from our exchange is that I don't think she really understands immigration policy.
But she's married to, like, the manager of, like, some bands or something.
I'm
so
very confused about that. I'm not sure
what's going
on
there.
She's married to now, yeah.
But yeah.
So she got in on an O-1 visa, which is basically outstanding person. And she seemed very happy about
You could also be, like, horrendously rich and America will let you in. That would be roughly what I suppose we would have in the UK then. If you need to be sponsored by a corporate, maybe there's some sort of marital, like, system going on there, or you're really fucking rich and they'll let you in anyway.
But that basically already... So what we have at the moment is a points-based system for non-EU migration. And that, I think... I think it works, even though it's very easily abused by, like, bogus colleges who give out student visas and by bogus companies that give out bogus work permits. Like, those kind of things are always going to happen.
Yeah.
And I feel like a work permit system ends up with a lot of the same problems of a points-based system, but without nearly as many safeguards for the rights of the individual.
So it's a worse system then?
I think so, yeah. But then I care about the individuals that actually come to this country. So, for example, in Singapore, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, feel free to berate me on Twitter, but Singapore essentially has a system where you have to be employed in order to actually get into the country on anything other than a tourist visa. And as soon as your employment is terminated or comes to an end, you have to leave.
Jeez.
Like, you have there's very little time for you to actually be able to. You won't be able to claim local benefits. You won't be able to spend time looking for another job there. And I worry that those are going to be the kind of conditions that we end up with in the UK. There's also one of the big things that, for some reason, keeps on coming up is the fact that farmers want to be able to employ seasonal workers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, I mean, they're. I'm worried about the farmers because of the rebate that we get from the EU.
They've said they'll like
match it until 2020.
Yeah, the British government have said they'll match it till 2020.
Yeah.
By which point we might have left the EU, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, who fucking knows? Wait, hey. But yeah, I'm concerned because I. Of the ways that people who end up coming to this country are going to end up perhaps being tied into employment.
Being exploited,
essentially.
I suppose, what's the alternative, though, if you want to actually control numbers?
If you want to control numbers, I think it's very difficult to do that in a humane way.
Some places have a lottery system, don't they?
The US has a lottery system for certain countries. I know that the UK is part of that lottery system. I don't see how that is any fairer. Like, you meet the criteria, and then you might get in. But how is... I don't understand how that's beneficial to...
Well, I mean, it takes out some of the corporate involvement. So you're actually given, like a relative... I don't know if it's a permanent visa, but it's not tied into your employment, I don't think.
So I know people from Northern... So Northern Irish and Irish citizens can apply for this lottery visa.
Yeah.
Whereas British cannot. And I know a couple of people who've gotten... Who've worked in the US, and I think it's for a year or 2 years.
Okay.
That visa lasts for, and then
is it only that?
Yeah.
Right.
And then anything after that, you have to get a real job.
But you're not like an open borders type, are you? So you think that there should be some sort of limits. So how are you going to...
No, I don't, actually.
You don't think there should be any limits?
No, I don't think there should be any artificial limits on immigration. No.
So you think the UK should have an open border with every country in the world?
No, I think there should be border checks, and then people who we don't want in the country because they have criminal records or because they incite hate or because they are Sam Pepper, we can say no to those people. So I think that a border force is important in that sense. I don't think that we should have a global Schengen.
Those limits are quite... They're quite thin, aren't they, in relative terms?
How do you mean?
Where if anyone can come in if they don't have a criminal record, that's quite a lot of people who could potentially move to the UK, isn't it? From around the world.
Yeah, but not everybody is going to want to move to a different country. So this is something that I don't understand about the immigration debate in the UK. Everybody seems to think that everyone's going to flock here. It takes an awful lot of commitment to uproot sometimes your whole family and your language and your life and your culture and move to another place where you don't necessarily know anybody or the language.
It does, yeah, but a lot of people do it if they're given the legal right to, don't they?
Yeah, but not... We were told that, millions and millions of Romanians were going to enter into the UK, and we got, a handful of thousand.
But we got, like...
Like, at the end of the day, I think most people would like to stay where they are in order to make a life for themselves and their families there. And it's only exceptional circumstances that people want to leave.
I don't think it's that exceptional. I mean, particularly when the different...
Otherwise, frankly, Eastern Europe would be empty right now, right? They'd all just move to Germany.
Well, I think you're right that people do want to, stay in their own countries, but by the same token, the difference in living standards between, Poland and the UK mm-hmm. is much smaller than the difference in living standards between, say, the UK and Kenya, or, wherever else you'd like to pick.
Well, yeah.
So the incentive to move from, say, Kenya mm-hmm. to the UK is much higher because of the difference in living standards.
Yes.
So if you were to open the borders to places from... I mean, this was the whole argument about why, in some ways, it was a mistake to expand the EU eastwards. Difference in living standards.
Okay, so this I think you've got the wrong end of the stick here. I don't think that we should have unlimited access for absolutely everybody globally into the UK.
Are you purely talking about the EU?
So I was doing it from an EU slant. I don't think that having an artificial number as a ceiling of this is how many people are going to be positive, this is the maximum number of people that can move to the UK, I think that's the wrong way of going about it because it doesn't take into account global economic factors. It's a vanity number, to be completely honest. I don't think that's helpful for our industry or internationally. But what I do think is that we should have some kind of points-based system that works fairly across all countries now.
See, although the number is arbitrary, if you want to limit migration, in some ways that's a sensible way of doing it because it means that you actually have, this is the number of people that are coming in, and that mm-hmm. therefore allows, this is the maximum number, I suppose, and that therefore allows you to make decisions about infrastructure. And it also, there's a lot of research about how into diasporas and that sort of thing. Mm. And if you have mass migration is different from a trickle of migration in the sense that it's harder to integrate people in a cultural sense if mass migration is taking place.
I don't think that that is what makes integration difficult. I think that encouraged ghettoisation of communities and segregation in education.
But mass migration is one of the factors that encourages segregation. Because obviously if you move to an area and...
I mean, you can say that, but
I can say that because it's true.
Who said it? Is it obvious? I don't think it's obvious.
Okay, Paul Collier, who's an Oxford academic, who's done...
One of those.
Tons and tons... Yeah, he's an expert, I'm afraid. And he's done tons of...
The British people are sick of hearing from experts, Jimmy.
They're sick of hearing from experts who get things wrong, is what Michael Gove actually said.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. Check the interview.
No, I did check the interview, and he definitely said British people are sick of hearing from experts.
They get things wrong. That's exactly what he said.
Well,
if you check the interview,
no,
anyway.
I did check the interview, but I don't think he said that. So,
go fuck yourself. But anyway, you know, there are academics who say that the numbers do matter, basically. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you've only got a small number of, say, migrants from a particular ethnic group, it's difficult for them to form a ghetto purely from... They don't know, there's not enough people to form a ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
So it obviously is a factor.
But the... let's not... I don't want to get into, like, what causes ghettos, but there's more to ghettos than just a lot of people from the same community.
Yes, I agree.
And I don't...
You do need a lot of people for a ghetto to happen.
No, of course, but a ghetto is caused by lack of prospects and lack of wealth and inability to have... and lack of social mobility. But that's what causes a ghetto, not lots of the same people being in the same place.
No, there is a...
And they end up having that characteristic
there absolutely
of everybody
is,
being
is
in the
a,
same
is
place
a bird,
because
is a
of disenfranchisement.
There's absolutely a birds of a feather factor, right? So, like, if you go to a foreign country, I mean, even if we were to move to, say, this is why when British people move to Spain, they tend to congregate into little British enclaves, mm-hmm. because, to a certain degree, like, that's just a natural thing for people to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily the thing that everyone would do. I mean, I'm sure if you moved to another country, you'd probably
But then Marbella isn't called a British ghetto. It's called a ghetto because it's poor and because there's no social mobility there. That's what characterises a ghetto. We have ghettos in the UK that aren't formed of lots of people from the same ethnic.
Oh, sorry, I meant it as a synonym for, like, enclave, if you like. So rather than, like...
Oh.
Yeah. So maybe that makes more sense.
I have fewer issues with enclaves than I do with ghettos.
Should we move on?
Yeah.
I'm already bored of this conversation.
Yeah, I'm bored of this too. We've been going for nearly half an hour as well. Boom, 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 boom. You're the one that didn't want structure, Jimmy.
Fuck it, man. Do you want to talk about grammar schools then?
Yeah, let's talk about grammar schools in a second. Can we have a musical interlude though? Because I need a wee.
Just pause it.
Okay, I'm going to pause it now, and we're going to come back seamlessly. So, talking of ghettos and segregation, grammar schools. What school did you go to?
I went to a private school.
Same.
Yeah. So we're eminently qualified to discuss the
yeah.
ins and
what,
outs.
Did you do the 11 plus? The 11 plus is the exam that people have to take in order to
get
into
grammar some grammar schools.
Oh, really? So several. So I took the 11 plus and didn't get into any grammar schools, and so mum and dad were like, go to the posh one.
Well, you're a dum-dum, aren't you?
Yeah, dum-dum.
I basically live in Surrey, or like I grew up in Surrey. So,
Surrey!
So you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a grammar school down there. Yeah, I don't know. I don't get... like, the whole grammar school debate, I don't really...
So break it down. What's happened? Basically,
yeah, we should
Justin
Greening,
properly. Who is the new education secretary... has rolled out proposals to lift the ban of having new selective schools. Selective schools being those that have an entrance exam that skim the cream from the top.
Apparently it was Tony Blair that introduced the ban.
Yes, so. In 1998.
Yeah.
So it means that grammar schools still exist, but there haven't been any new ones for like the last 16 years.
That's it. I mean, that whole policy of like essentially the parent, like the middle class parents that kicked off got to keep their grammar schools.
Yeah.
And everyone else like lost them. Does seem pretty weird.
They were so. This is something that the Tony Blair government tried to do quite a lot. They were like, we're going to give people the option of having this or taking away this thing in, like, local referenda.
Yeah.
They did it with local governments and city mayors, where nobody ended up wanting a mayor. Like, they trialled it in the North East.
They did, like, the Northern Assembly idea. That
yeah.
was them, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody wanted it. And they did the same thing with grammar schools. They were, like, they gave local authorities the chance to say, we don't want these schools to be grammar schools anymore. And the one time that they trialled it, it was very definitive that people wanted to keep the grammar schools. Because parents are idiots and they think their kids are exceptional and that they should be going to these elitist...
Well, it's like that John Oliver line about like the American dream, is that mm-hmm. everyone in America basically knows the game is rigged, but they just don't think that they're going to take the hits.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Yeah, which is the same thing with grammar schools. What are the main criticisms of grammar schools? Give me the top lines.
Well, one of the points is you mentioned the 11 plus and the certain kids like are not really ready to take a selective test when they're aged only 11 or 10 years old.
And it's very easy to... People are coached for it, essentially.
Yeah, it's very easy. It's very easy if you're rich just to game the system and, like, pay for tuition. So, you know, little Timmy or whatever, who's actually really thick,
manages to get. He would be called Timmy, wouldn't he, as well?
Yeah.
Tim or, like, Winston.
I mean, the idea is it just, because of the money reason that I just mentioned, it kind of just entrenches privilege and increases inequality.
Mm-hmm. So when they were originally rolled out in 1944 alongside secondary modern schools. So secondary modern schools were essentially where people were taught vocations, and these were children that were basically told,
it was supposed to be a three-tiered system. So you had grammar schools, secondary moderns, which is similar to what comp is now.
Yeah.
And you also had technical schools, but almost no technical schools actually ended up getting made, and they were like apprenticeships,
like,
and that sort of
thing. Three technical schools that still exist.
But it was supposed to be a three-tiered system. It ended up being two-tiered, and
basically, it went at the age of 11 to every child in the country. Oh, you're smart. You're going to go into further education and run the country, or you're going to be a builder. And went and decided that based on one exam on one day when a kid is 11, which is stupid, right? It's insane.
Yeah, like it does seem pretty dumb when you put it that way.
Thank you. I'm very good at summarising.
But there's a lot of Labour politicians who, like, really hate it. So John Prescott, like, sort of famously, like, rages against it every time it mentions. Took it quite personally.
Is John Prescott still relevant in the political landscape?
Is Labour still relevant? Is the real question.
That's a very true point.
Yeah.
But so that's why grammar schools were kind of their continued production and rollout was stopped in 1998.
Yeah.
Theresa May seems to think that these new grammar schools are not going to be like that. And they're going to...
She went to grammar school. She actually went to the same grammar school as my mum.
Really? Well, claim to fame.
Yeah.
It's
now a state school. I mean, sorry, now a comp, I should say.
Right. They now... Our cabinet now has a majority of people who went to grammar schools.
Mm.
And there's this thing with the Tory party of loads of romanticism about the grammar school. Because a lot of people who've ended up in the Conservative Party have... come from that stock and worked their way up the social ladder, started off by going to a posh grammar school.
Yeah, well, the idea behind grammar schools, and this is the romantic myth, is that you can be a poor kid and you can get into a grammar school and it lifts you up, and then you go on to great things.
Which it does do to those small number of poor kids who can pass the 11 plus.
One of my granddads, it did work for him, but mostly it's just gamed by the middle class, and then that's that.
I was listening to the news quiz over the weekend on Radio 4, and I can't remember which comedian it was, but one of the comedians was like, oh, it was basically a way of placating the really intelligent poor people, because if a poor person is really clever and ends up being hard done by the system, they're going to end up turning into like a revolutionary and leading the poor in a revolt. Whereas if you say, ah, you, sir, are a clever little thing, why don't you come over to this grammar school and
join
we will lift
side.
You up? Yeah, join the dark side, essentially. And it just placates all of the people that could possibly push for social change in this country.
That's fucking genius.
If that
was the reasoning, that is very, very clever. Neither of us are really in favour of there being more grammar schools then.
So there was one thing that you were saying that alongside the new rollout of new grammar schools, they are going to also push for private schools, the kind of schools that we went to that are fee-paying.
The testing of their charitable status, all private schools are charities, is going to be more stringent. So you're going to have to meet more requirements as an independent school in order to retain that.
And I think that a part of that will probably end up being taking a certain number of people from poorer backgrounds. I would assume that that's part of the...
Yeah, I mean, something that May did say about the new grammar schools is that they're going to have more requirements to take on poorer pupils. So it's not going to be a rerun of the 1950s, at least that's what she says.
But it's going to be a rerun of the 1950s to a certain extent, because it's still going to take away all of the smart people. And there are so many studies in education that show that having mixed ability education actually benefits everyone. And there's an idea that, oh, my child shouldn't have to do maths with Tyrone from down the road because they're special. And there's that.
See, I've heard the opposite. I've heard that if you do select for ability, the people who are good get better from working with similarly smart people, mm-hmm. you know, similarly academic people, and the people who are bad get worse. So putting them all into one basket does make it worse for the top end, but it makes it better for the bottom end.
So I understand that the negative effects on the inherently smarter kids are actually
a lot milder than the good effects on the good ones.
And surely that's basically what we want, right? We need better comprehensive education, better state education in this country, rather than bringing up this old idea of romanticism of everybody can work up from the working classes into a better life, right? It's our version of the American dream, is essentially.
It's a milder version of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's an element of, one of the reasons America is the most powerful country in the world is that it doesn't really do that levelling out effect, and therefore the best people who have all the luck
can go
all the way, so, and we have, in Europe, less of that.
Mm-hmm. Less of that. Silly aspirations.
So, yeah, in that sense, it is a political decision.
Isn't this also something really silly for Theresa May? We keep on saying Theresa May, interestingly, rather than Justin Greening, and I think that this is going to be an interesting fact of her premiership, because she is in charge of everything, it seems. She wants to have her fingers in all of the pies, and there doesn't seem to be anybody taking charge of their own departments. And
she's going to be a total prime minister.
I think so. I think, like, lots of people are likening her to Gordon Brown in the way that he was when he initially took over from Tony Blair.
The other side of that, though, is that she is kind of letting the free Brexiteers go off and do their own thing before scolding them like little children.
Which, yeah, that's quite funny. She's over absolutely everything apart from the Brexit negotiations. She's kind of letting the Brexiteers fuck up on their own, which is quite fun to watch.
I think that's pretty dangerous as it goes.
But she, speaking of danger, she is pushing forward a controversial policy in grammar schools with a really tiny majority in the House of Commons. She only has a majority of 16.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a large number of Conservative MPs who are also not in favour of rolling out grammar schools again. You were worried about this being held back or defeated. Not that you can't really defeat something in the Lords, but you can make it insist that it's
edited. The Tories don't have a majority in the Lords,
no.
And the Lord, as you say, like the Lords, there's only like a few very select pieces of legislation the Lords can block absolutely, mm-hmm. like extending the lifetime of a parliament beyond mm-hmm. however many years. But yeah, in general, they can only edit stuff and like send it back to the Commons. But they can only do that three times.
The main problem is going to be in the House of Commons, where I think there's enough people in the Conservative Party who are against grammar schools to wipe out that majority. And I don't think that even those in the Labour Party who are kind of soft on grammar schools and like, oh, maybe they're an okay thing, I don't think there's enough of them to be able to buoy that.
I don't think they would anyway, even if they were mildly in favour of grammar schools, the amount of damage you can do to the May government.
Which is why I think it's really interesting that this is one of her first policy decisions after the summer break, is to start trying to roll out grammar schools. Do you think that this is maybe her being calculating in being like, oh, I can't actually pass any significant legislation, we need to go to a general election, and then we have a general election in the spring? That's my mental
Why would
process.
She feel the need to, like, try pushing for a grammar school bill, losing humiliatingly,
mm-hmm.
and then call a general election when she could very well just say, well, I think we need a general election now because I'm a new prime minister.
Because I think that it helps for her to have a reason behind it so that she gets support from more of her party in order to be a... Because we have fixed-term parliaments now and they need a total majority of over 66% in order to shorten the length of the parliament and call a general election. And I think that she would need that kind of backing.
I don't think she's going to get Labour MPs, essentially, you know.
I think so. They want Jeremy Corbyn to die, for want of a better word.
I don't think he'll, like, resign, though. I think what would happen if we had a general election, say, early next year, like next May or whatever... I think Labour would just be fucking destroyed. Like, loads of MPs would lose their seats. Mm. And I think Jeremy Corbyn would still remain in place because all the mechanisms for choosing the leader would still remain hugely in his favour. So I don't really see how that solves their problem.
Perhaps. But I think that also gives those in the Labour Party who hate Jeremy Corbyn, which is the majority of the MPs, the vast majority of the MPs. It gives them ammunition to force him out.
Not any more than they already have, really. I mean, yeah, sure, they say, well, he lost an election, but all that will happen is the Corbynites will say, well, you know, we were sabotaged by scheming Blairites, the Tory press fucked us over, aren't the Conservatives bastards anyway, so...
And then shaking their fists readily outside the Houses of Parliament. But I think that grammar schools, actually, in the grand scheme of things, is quite a soft... thing. Education reform takes ages to actually take effect, and this is the thing that she's chosen to kind of sacrifice, perhaps.
I see it another way, like, the grammar school debate is quite politicised, and people get quite emotional about it, particularly politicians. I think she's getting out of the way, or she's trying to, what could be quite a difficult policy, quite a controversial policy, early in the parliament, so that by the time the general election rolls around in 2020, if she lets it run that long, people have forgotten about it, basically.
Perhaps. Anything else you want to say about grammar schools? You had a load of statistics. You did some research, didn't you? Do you want to throw some percentages at me?
So YouGov did a poll, as they do.
Apparently,
60% of the British public... want grammar schools, are in favour of Theresa May's grammar school
reform. Yeah, but this is the same thing as the British public don't know what are good for them. After Brexit. I mean, I still maintain that. But it's because they all believe that, oh, my little Timmy will be able to get into a grammar school, and they'll be really pro it until Timmy doesn't get into a grammar school. Yeah. Essentially, right? And there's a load of romanticism, especially from the generation that are, like, our parents' age, who, like, were around grammar schools, went to grammar schools, were able to make something of themselves. And there's loads of those romantic stories, and you don't end up hearing from the people that didn't get into the grammar schools at the 11 plus and then ended up being cement workers.
The thing is, though, if you're, like, relatively rich... Well, you don't even have to be that rich. If you're just, like, middle class and you can't necessarily... It's difficult for you to, like, send your kids to private school, like, because of the money. It kind of makes sense to be in favour of grammar schools because you can get, like, a private school-esque education without having to pay for it.
Yeah.
So from a class interest point of view, for a lot of people, it would make sense.
Yeah, but...
I'm not saying you should do it. I'm just saying, you know...
Any other statistics you want to throw at me?
No.
No? Okay, cool. No.
I think we're done.
Okay, let's talk about Keith Vaz.
Do you want to... What are the actual allegations made against Vaz? Do you want to summarise them?
So this was a sting. So I'm actually quite fond of this story, because after all of the bullshit of a general election and a EU referendum and the Scottish referendum like a year before that, we've finally gotten back to our roots of a real political sex scandal. And it's like I'm getting real nostalgic pangs from like the mid-noughties, where loads of Labour and Conservative MPs were victims of stings by tabloid newspapers. It's like we've gone back to the good old days.
Yeah.
But basically, Keith Vaz, who was the chair of the Home Select Committee. Home Affairs Select Committee, which basically deals with internal UK...
It's policing and stuff like that, isn't it?
Yeah. He was a victim of a Daily Mirror sting where they got a couple of prostitutes.
Eastern European prostitutes.
Eastern European, goodness gracious, it just keeps on getting worse, doesn't it? They have video evidence of him having a couple of rent boys come to his North London apartment.
Wasn't there cocaine involved, although Vaz didn't take any of it?
Yeah, he offered to buy cocaine for these young gentlemen sex workers. Keith Vaz is
married.
Married, has two children who are like 19 and 21 and is Lebanese, I believe. He was born in Lebanon. Shall I check that?
I think you should check.
Yemen. He's yet from Yemen.
Yemen.
He's British, but was born. He's one of three MPs born in Yemen. So he's from like that cultural background.
Is he religious at all?
I don't know. Probably not, judging from his actions.
You say that.
I'm not sure there are many religions that condone buying sex off of people. I'm just going to put that out there.
I don't know, man. Mormons, maybe. You know, I feel they might not have an opinion on that sort of thing.
Do Mormons... I don't think Mormons buy sex. I mean, they do some weird things to do with underwear, but I don't
think... If we have any Mormon listeners, can you write in?
Yeah, can you let us know? Where do you stand on sex work? I feel really sorry for him.
I feel a bit sorry for him that he did, you know, cheat on his wife.
He did cheat on his wife, but also I think that people should have the right to cheat on their partners.
I think they should have the right to, but I still think it makes you a scumbag.
So most politicians are scumbags. Not most of them. Just lots of them are scumbags.
Less than 50%, but still quite a high number.
Still quite a high number are scumbags. I feel sorry for him, and I get like a pang of empathy because he hired male prostitutes. Because he is 59 years old, he grew up in an era, like when he was born, homosexuality was illegal in the UK, and he would have grown up in a culture where homosexuality wasn't okay. Like, he would have never really had the option of being an out gay man and being able to make it in public life.
But he could have done, like, within the last 15 years or
so. Sure, but he already had a wife and kids, right?
Yeah, but, you know, if you realise that you're, in fact, gay, if he is gay, he might be bisexual, you know.
Could be bi-curious. But could be a bit queer.
If he's decided he wants to do this, there's a right way of doing it, which is essentially confronting your wife with the way you feel, which is obviously unpleasant, but is a better way of doing things than what he's done.
No, but it's really difficult when you've built a false life. If he were born 50 years later, then he probably wouldn't have had to go through and be forced into doing the kinds of...
I'm not saying it's like his situation wasn't difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone's a victim of their own life circumstances. At what point do people have responsibility?
Completely. But on that level, I empathise to a certain extent with him. Because I'm like, oh, you poor guy, I could have ended up like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I were born in the 50s or the 60s, I would have probably also... had a bit of a shit time and pretended to like ladies. And I did that for a brief period in my teenage years. But it clearly lasted longer for Mr. Vaz.
Yeah, but I mean, this guy, you know, he still did what he did. I mean, do you don't think he should have resigned then?
I think he should have resigned. Of course he should. Because the Home Affairs Select Committee...
is investigating prostitution.
Yeah, one of the main things that it does is reevaluating the UK government's attitude towards
sexual... It's field research, you know. He's dedicated to the cause.
Very crude.
Is that where... I need to make a decision on this. I need to go some for the goods.
Speaking of trying to cover it up, one of the things that I found quite endearing about the response was a couple of friends spoke to the papers and said that, oh no, these weren't... He didn't know that they were sex workers. He thought that they were plumbers coming to fix the plumbing. Cue loads of plumbing puns. Sex jokes.
I already did it before the podcast started. Yeah, I don't have enthusiasm anymore.
You kind of exhausted it. Do you think that tabloid newspapers still have a role in doing these kind of sting operations? Do you think there's any value? Are we any better off now that we know that Keith Vaz occasionally pays gentlemen for sex?
So a lot of people on Reddit, which is obviously the best source of anything, commented and said...
It's slightly better than Twitter.
Vaz has been like a moralising cunt for decades now. And it's quite satisfying in a way to see him get some just desserts in that regard. And there's a certain point to which that's true. I don't know if he's said very much about like family life and fidelity and that sort of thing. Would be quite pleasing.
He hasn't really, I don't think. I've done a little bit of digging into his past and these kinds of things. And the worst thing that I could find was that last year he did a campaign in his local area about safe sex. And then in one of these sting videos that got released, he brags about having unprotected sex with with another prostitute previously. Mm. And so there's like that. But I feel like Keith Vaz wasn't hugely... like one of those preachy-preachies.
He was like head of the, you know, chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee, and that involves...
Do you think he should have stepped down?
Yeah, kind of. But I'm surprised about people's tolerance for like cheating on their wives/husbands in public life, because I think for most people that's one of the shittiest things that they are ever likely to do, you know, because most people
you know, will not go out and commit murder or, you know, do something really serious. But like,
yeah, but cheating on your partner isn't illegal. Murder is.
It's not illegal, but it's still a really shitty thing to do. And the effect that cheating sometimes has on, you know, the wronged wife / husband / whatever can be like seriously devastating as well. Like that does, it really does get to some people. And yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation before, but there appears to be like a, with the whole Boris Johnson thing, who effectively did quite a similar thing.
Yeah, he's got a couple of illegitimate children.
He's got one, for sure. But yeah, he's notorious for cheating on his wife, and he appears to have escaped any kind of scrutiny for it whatsoever. But, you know, Vaz had to resign. Go fucking figure.
Yeah, but also, so I don't think he would have had to resign if he weren't working on something. Like, obviously, this story is a huge distraction, but if he were working on something that had nothing to do with prostitution or drug legislation, then I think that he could have probably carried on legitimately. But because of the fact that he's like trying to help legislate for the things that he's partaking in.
Well, he did offer to buy cocaine, and obviously,
so that's what he's now under.
That's kind of illegal, isn't it?
He's now under investigation.
Yeah.
For intent to supply,
but he's not been charged. Like anything.
Hasn't been charged yet, yeah. But it's still early days in that sense, and I think the Met are looking into it.
There's definitely an argument to be had, and like the Tories obviously got fucking stuck in comments and stuff about this after the story was released. Like, if you're a lawmaker, you can't really be seen to break the law.
I think that's,
you know,
probably
that's
fair.
Kind of fair, isn't it?
Yeah, but then what about people like Nick Clegg saying that they've smoked weed in the past?
But that's like doing something when you were a kid or like 20 years ago is different from I'm currently doing this now while I'm in the process of being a lawmaker. So like if the fact that, say, even if you were a career criminal 20 years ago and you say, well, now I'm reformed, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where somebody who has once committed a crime can never be in a position of authority. But if they're actively committing crime while they're in a position of authority, that's not ideal.
Yeah.
You know?
My overwhelming feeling is I just feel sorry for him.
I don't feel sorry for him because he's obviously like a total fucking sleazebag. But,
yeah, and you know, is apparently a multimillionaire, so good for him. But
he owns like 7 houses, I heard.
Yeah, good for him.
It's hard to feel that sorry for a guy.
I was reading Guido Fawkes because... great source of political
entertainment. It is very funny, isn't it?
And they, like, he dug up when Keith Vaz was originally elected in, I think it's Leicester, one of the Leicester seats is his.
Yeah, I read that story.
And he said that he was going to just take an average wage and then donate the rest of it. Well, he's managed to do quite well out of just an average wage, hasn't he? I wonder where that money's coming from. Anyway.
It used to be the Tories that got done for the sex things and Labour got done for the money, but, you know, Vaz is breaking boundaries, turning things on its head.
Brilliant. Anything else you want to say about Vaz?
I'd prefer not to talk about him ever again.
Cool, very good, excellent. What did you guys... Hello, listener, I'm addressing you directly now. What did you think of this new format? Let us know if you hated it. We'll probably ignore you, but let us know what you thought of this more rambly, more chatty, more relaxed, more chilled out, more banter ridden, more you know, more yes, more now, more new, you know. Let us know what you think. Like, you can tell us by tweeting at us at Right Dishonor. That's our handle. You can go to rightdishonourable.com.
Or you can go to iTunes and leave us a review.
You can leave us a review. Okay, this is the bit where I try and find a review. Basically, we're going to try a new thing to try and incentivize you to leave us more reviews, because it's lovely to be summarized by you guys. Leave us 5 stars if you like, because we have a winning streak at the moment. We've got 26 ratings. They're all 5 stars. Isn't that good?
There you go.
Brilliant. Well done, us. I'm going to go to our most recent
review July or whatever.
From listener 24,601, which was left in July. And they said, literally love it. I look forward to each episode coming out. Fits the bill perfectly for being interesting and funny liberal political analysis without becoming an echo chamber. Thanks, dudes. Less than 3. So if you would like me to put on a Margaret Thatcher voice and read out your review, then leave us a review. And then tweet at us, because then I won't miss it. Good? What do you think of this haphazard attempt of me trying to increase engagement with the podcast?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I think it'll work.
Yeah. Just a highlight for me from our reviews. Tris Hall on the 16th of March 2016 left us 5 stars and said, "Well, hey." Insightful. So leave us a review. Thanks on iTunes. Thanks, that means a lot. See you later. I've been Jazza.
I've been Jimmy.
And this has been the Red Dishonorable Podcast. Oh my god, it's so nice to be back. Isn't it?
It's fine.
It's fine.